This is Eric Balmer, and you're listening to my chapter of As the Story Grows.
Welcome to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. I'm Brian Patton. This week, Eric Balmer of Fielding and Plank Eye joins us. When I shared that Eric was this week's guest on social media, I recommended people go listen to the Labeled podcast about Plank Eye featuring Eric. There's a link on our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages if you've not listened to that episode yet. The reason why I recommended that podcast was even though I thought the way they framed the narrative, and I thought they were at times unfair to Plank Eye, is that Eric talks a lot about the band chasing success after their tour with Newsboys, and what kept the band going after Scott left. So we do not rehash any of that information on this podcast. So if you want to hear what was driving the band post-Commonwealth, go check out that episode of Labeled. We do talk about Scott's departure from the band, Eric's personal musical history, and Fielding. We spend a lot of time talking about Fielding, and I think it's a really good conversation about the early days of Fielding and what's driving Eric now. So I hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode with Eric.
I was such a foolish man. I was the first to stand, clapping for the thief who ran. God and cheering fans. I am a sun god. I'll make your ears bleed if you can hear me. I'll give you 10 seconds that won't leave.
So, are you Long Beach born and raised?
I was born in Long Beach and moved to Long Beach about a little over 20 years ago. So I was raised in Fountain Valley, which is sort of a nondescript suburb in Orange County. And when my wife and I were engaged, I was visiting some friends in Long Beach and saw some, it was just, I hadn't really been to Long Beach most of my life, and I thought, wow, this is a great place, and the rent was really cheap at the time, and it had sort of a cool vibe, and so my wife and I moved to Long Beach, and we've been never turned back.
That's awesome. What was growing up like for you?
Growing up, I was raised in a home. I wasn't raised in the church, or I wasn't raised in a Christian home. I just lived on a cul-de-sac in Fountain Valley. It was a great neighborhood in the sense that there was tons of kids, and a family moved in at one point in time. Actually, Ryan Denis from Stavesacre, his family moved into the street that I lived on, and I became friends with him. And then they sort of exposed me to the church and Christianity and things like that. But the home that I lived in, I come from a broken home, and it was a difficult home. So, I was sort of raised without God, and came around to having a faith in part due to Ryan Denis' influence in my life and his family.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. What got you into music?
When I was a kid, I just loved it, you know. My dad worked for Fender Guitars at one point in my life. He worked for a bunch of different music companies. He worked for Music Man, which is an old company a long time ago. He worked for Fender. And so my dad was always listening to music. He had very large speakers in the house, and so my life was surrounded by music. I was exposed to it, and I just sort of cultivated cultivated and developed a love of music on my own. Yeah, and then when I was in high school, I started playing the guitar and tinkering out the guitar and wanting to learn how to play guitar, and then just sort of went on my own trajectory on bands that I liked and things that I liked. And then in high school, actually, again, Ryan Denis was my neighbor, and he wanted to start a band, and so he asked me to be in it just because I was one of the few people who knew how to play guitar that he knew. And he wanted to do a hardcore band, and I was in high school. It was just something to do. I didn't really even listen to hardcore music, really. And so I said, sure, and I had to even learn what a crunch chord was and all that, and so I had to come around to learning all those things. And then in college, the band that I played with, Ryan, we used to play shows occasionally with Plank Eye, and Plank Eye was originally a three-piece, and I got to know them, and at some point in time, they asked Ryan if they could snag me, and then I joined Plank Eye. They wanted another guitar player, and I joined the band. So their first record I didn't have anything to do with. It's called Spill, and then Spark Onwards is when I kind of had something to do with the music and things like that.
That's awesome. Was your dad working at Fender one of the reasons why you picked up guitar? Did you just have a drawing to that as an instrument?
Gosh, you know, I think if I recollect correctly, so my dad did buy a drum set for me, and it was given to me by one of his coworkers, and a guitar. But I never came around to learning it, and if I remember correctly, what got me into actually really trying to learn how to play guitar is, I think that when I was in high school, I started going to a youth group, and I think I wanted to learn how to play some, you know, worship songs, some basic chords. I think that's how it started. I don't remember exactly.
Gotcha.
It had something to do with trying to learn some church stuff. And then it branched out, and then I started to try to learn how to play, you know, bands that I liked and things like that. So, but really, I never actually played other people's songs very often. I always sort of just kind of doodled, and I think that's why I became a songwriter, is because it was kind of natural for me to just start tinkering around and then learning how to craft songs.
Gotcha. So that band you mentioned you were in with Ryan, would that have been Outnumbered?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Yeah, wow. That's impressive. You know that.
Searching for answers, the whole time we've known. Ignoring his guidance and the truth we've been shown. Always thinking we can make it on our own. Never realizing we're all.
Well, I only know that because Jonathan Caro was on the show months back, and he credited you and Outnumbered with him joining Bloodshed.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, well, actually, when we Outnumbered was originally, the original name for our band, we were called The Vigils.
The Vigils.
The Vigils, yeah. And we were playing music that was more in keeping with what I liked. And then Ryan Denig kind of got the hardcore bug, and then I remember him announcing that he wanted us to be a hardcore band, and I was like, okay, and so I just did it, and I went along with it. But, yeah, The Vigils was a little bit more, I don't even know what you would call it, but just, yeah, less heavy and crunchy.
So Outnumbered, were you guys playing, like, with Focused and Unashamed around that time period?
All that stuff, yeah. I was involved in that movement. I guess they called it spirit-filled hardcore at the time. And yeah, I remember. And then Mark Solomon moved down to Huntington Beach from Fresno, and we were all like, "Whoa, it's Mark Solomon!" And then a few years later, the Tooth and Nail stuff happened, and off things went. Never planned, never a dream of mine. It's just kind of how my life ended up unrolling.
Yeah.
At least at that time. Yeah.
Yeah. So you said you didn't record on Spill, were you around when the band signed, when Plank Eye signed to Tooth & Nail?
I was, yes. So I'm in the artwork on Spill, but because by that time Spill was basically a demo that they had done, and they manufactured the recording and sold it at local shows. And so when they asked me to be in the band, I learned the songs and played along and did those songs live with them. And then, you know, and then we got signed, and so Brandon just basically repackaged and repurposed that recording that they did. And then, so yeah, and then I think, let's see here. Oh yeah, the first tour that we went on was Spill. And so yeah, I was in the band and toured with them. Our first tour was with Starflyer 59.
Oh wow.
Yep. Crazy.
Yeah. What was the scene like for Plank Eye in those early days?
It was pretty cool, actually. It was mainly local, and obviously it was very church heavy and church kid related. So we played a lot of shows, you know, on weeknights or on weekends, and we'd get really good crowds. It was pretty crazy. People were excited, and we were excited, and it was just fun. It wasn't, it was kind of wild. I remember thinking, this is really weird that, you know, 200 people are coming to see us play.
That's fun. What got you guys connected with Tooth & Nail originally?
I think that Brandon must have heard of us, and he came to a show, and he just came in and chatted with us and offered us a record deal, and we were like, for sure, you know. We didn't, you know, nobody at the time knew that Tooth & Nail was going to be a thing. And, you know, we didn't, we had, you know, we just were like, oh, sweet. And I think that Plank Eye was maybe the third or fourth band to sign with Tooth & Nail. We were one of the first five for sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at that point, Tooth & Nail Records was in Irvine, California, and they had a little office there, and that's where they ran it out of before it got moved up to Seattle.
Yeah. What was it like over the years to kind of watch Tooth & Nail and the whole scene grow and expand?
You know, it's interesting. Today's September 11th, and before talking to you, I was thinking about September 11th, and it dawned on me that one of Plank Eye's last shows was this time, a couple weeks after September 11th. You know, that was the last show we played. And so I think, wow, gosh, that was, you know, 18 years ago that we played our last show. It's pretty crazy. And so, you know, I think that one of the things that's been surprising to me is, you know, you reach out to me and ask me about this time, you know, and I've had a couple other people do that. And it's surprising to me because it's flattering. I was like, who really cares? And then sometimes I hear these stories about it, that it was meaningful to people. And one of the things that seems to be the case is something happened back then, right? And when Brandon started Tooth & Nail, we didn't know it, but there really was something like a kind of bottom-up cultural moment that happened that's not going to ever happen again, right? Like, there's nothing like that anymore. And so there's a sense in which, as I look back on it, I'm grateful, and I'm kind of tickled that happened and I played a part of it. You know, nobody planned it, but it was just cool to be a part of a moment in history, limited though it was, you know, in the grand scheme of things. It was kind of like, oh, wow, I had some part in this time where there was this Christian rock scene that had some vibrancy, and it was unique, and there was passion, and there was excitement, and it was cool. So I look back on it really fondly, and, Brandon Brandon didn't start Tooth & Nail Records, my life would have been very different. So I'm thankful.
Yeah.
That you're sorry, I forgive you, I promise to restore now.
I know you just recently, or maybe not recently for you, but I know it just aired relatively recently. You were on the Labeled podcast, so I'm not going to go, I'll link that, and we won't go over everything you talked about in that. But
there's a couple things in there that aren't entirely correct, but for the most part, it's good. Yeah, I listened to it.
I had some personal beefs with that too, but do you guys know why Scott left the band?
I actually don't, to be honest. My speculation is that he just didn't feel like touring, and he I'm not sure. I think that it was a rash decision at some level. You know, he got upset and just quit. And he meant it. So, you know, to be honest, Brian, I've never asked Scott why he quit the band. I never, you know, we never had a sit down about it, so I don't want to misrepresent him.
Sure.
And as far as, I mean, yeah, it was, I don't know exactly. I do have theories, right, but I don't want to misrepresent Scott or, you know, disrespect him in any way. So yeah, I want to be fair to him, but there's no animosity or hard feelings or anything. I love Scott, and in fact, a number of years ago, he was doing some solo thing in Long Beach, and I just drove out and showed up and hung out with him. And Scott and I aren't friends, but Scott and I weren't ever friends in the sense that we're very different people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that we have any bad feelings towards each other, but what he likes and what I like is very different. So
yeah,
that's really why I'm not in a relationship with him now. It's not because of any hard feelings or anything. So yeah, you have to ask Scott.
So one of the things you mentioned on the Labeled podcast is that when Scott left, you really wanted to end the band, that you didn't want to keep going, and it was more out of just this sense of commitment to you know, these financial commitments and these other commitments you had to keep writing. How did you, in that not wanting to keep doing it, find it in you to keep writing songs?
Well, you know, heartache manufactures songs. So most of the songs that I write in life tend to be stem from something that's troubling me or hurting me or whatever. And so I just naturally gravitate towards songwriting at those times. So I think that I think that when we went out on tour, it was motivated by this mountain of debt and financial commitments that we had, you know, and also we had signed all these contracts with a series of concert promoters. And like I said in that last podcast, I believed at the time and up until recently, I was under the impression that we owed Brandon two records, but you know, it sounds like I had a false assumption there, that if we would have ended it, that would have been that. So I wouldn't have been able to do anything under a different name without consulting, but I was under the mistaken belief that we owed him those two records. So that was my mistake, and it was, for whatever reason, that's what I thought. So when we went out on tour, I mean, obviously we still loved music, but, and we still love playing. Plank Eye had become, it wasn't life-giving anymore, you know, but yet we had these commitments. So I think that really a sense of duty and, drove us on. And then when we wrote Relocation, which is the first record after the big, you know, for the split, you know, I think that some of the songs that in the Plank Eye corpus that I'm most proud of are on that record. And there's a few songs on there that to me are some of my most cherished songs that I've written in all my songwriting. I'm proud of some of those songs. Some of them though, but, and I remember when we did that record, it was just Luis and I and Gene Eugene. We hired Frank Lenz to play drums on it. So it was just really me and Luis and Gene, and you know, Frank came in and laid down drums on the tracks. And I remember when we did the record, we made it, and afterwards Luis and I didn't know what to think about the record. We just did our level best and put it out there, and we're like, well, you know, and the thing that was interesting about it is that record really clicked and connected with a lot of people. And it was actually kind of surprising to us that it was loved in the way that it was loved. So, yeah, and I just think that part of that comes from, you know, it was a therapeutic and record, you know, trying to deal with, you know, that stuff comes out of you when you've been on the road. We were, I mean, Plank Eye toured a lot, you know, so there was a lot of, it wasn't just a Scott thing. I mean, we experienced a lot of stuff over those years.
Yeah, no, because Relocation and more so Strange Exchange are probably my two favorite Plank Eye records. Especially Strange Exchange. I think it's some of the band's best work.
Strange Exchange was a difficult record for us because Gene Eugene, who produced all of our records, and died. And
yeah.
Gene was a legend, and Gene was also really, really special to us and really, really influential in our lives. I mean, Gene was a very, very influential person in my life. Top 5, top 10 most influential people in my life. And when he died, we came back and we were already scheduled to go into the studio, and we still recorded at the Green Room, Gene's studio, and Chris Colbert filled in. But I think that Luis and I were so used to and so comfortable with Luis that a Strange Exchange record was, it was strange for us. In fact, I just think about the title right now, Strange Exchange. It was also like Exchange of Producers. And so I think we had a tough time with Strange Exchange.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it turned out well. And, it still ranks as my favorite Plank Eye record. All these years later. Yeah, something about those songs like resonate with me, especially like Let Me Be Near You, when you like scream at the end of that song, like I just love it.
Thank you. Yeah, I remember when I was writing that song. I remember writing that song in my apartment in Long Beach, and I can remember howling it in my apartment, and it brings me back.
Please let me be near you.
You've been doing fielding for longer than you've been doing Planka at this point. Since fielding, the first record came out in 2004 or 5. And I just saw your first record came out with Militia Group.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's right. So fielding was, kind of had two phases. We were a local band out here, some friends of mine in Long Beach, and we were going at it pretty heavy, playing all the time, playing, you know, my wife was in the band too, and, you know, we were kind of quote-unquote trying to make it, you know. To be honest, there's a part of me at the time that felt like being in the Christian scene was a little bit pretend. You know, like, I had this sort of self-doubt at some level where it was kind of almost along the lines of, well, would you really be able to do this, and would there really be a market for you if it wasn't in this kind of Christian rock scene? And I think a lot of Christian bands have that sort of self-doubt, like, you know what I'm saying? This is kind of B-team stuff, you know, can you roll A-team? And,
yeah.
And I don't know if I ever explicitly said it, but anyways, when I did fielding, you know, we were just trying to be a general market band, and, you know, whatever. So we did. We played a lot, and we were played in L.A. a lot, and we actually did have attention from major labels, and it didn't ever quite go, but we were close, you know? I mean, as close as you're going to get, right? So, and we had a manager and producer and all these things. And then we kept doing it, and I remember feeling starting to, like, really not like music. And I can remember a time, this is going to sound a little bit harsh, but oh well. I remember we were opening for the Cold War Kids in a place called the Detroit Bar. And this was right on the cusp of when the Cold War Kids, that first record that they did, Robbers and Thieves, I think it was called, you know, with, you know, Hanging Up to Dry and these songs.
Yeah.
And we played with them, and we were the opening band, and it was packed, you know, and it for them, not for us, right? But we were the opener, and it was when the Cold War Kids were just there was a buzz about them and all this stuff, and we were playing the show, and I remember I had this experience on stage where I was talking, you know, having a meta conversation with myself, and I remember thinking to myself, why do I care what these 18-year-olds think about me? Why am I trying to get them to like me? Why am I trying to get their approval? And I kind of went dark, to be honest. I just something clicked in my heart and in my brain, and I said, I'm done.
Mm.
And so I told the people that played, the other guys that played with me, hey guys, I don't know what to do, but I am taking a year away from music. I'm unhappy. I don't enjoy music anymore. By that point, I've been doing music for so much of my life, you know, and it was a constant. And I just put my guitar down. I did not touch my guitar for a year. I didn't allow myself to write a single song. I just said, I just took a 1 year break from music to try to, and then to just try to kind of heal and, I don't know, maybe fall in love with music again. And then what happened out of that is I ended up continuing to do music under the name Fielding. Fielding's my middle name. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to do music now for how I want to do it entirely, and I'm going to do music avocationally as a hobby. I'm not trying to make a living, or I'm not trying to quote-unquote make it anymore. I'm just going to be a songwriter. And so then I put out a record. I came back to music, and I put out the Fielding record in 2009 called The Voice of Us. And so from that time on, I've kind of done Fielding records as kind of something that I do in life, but I love making records, and so that's kind of how it goes. I occasionally play, very, very occasionally. I have three kids, and I work, and I put out three Fielding records since that post-militia phase of Fielding.
I will wait for you to come, lift my head, take me from this old house. Gotten cold, so call me out, call me out, call me out, make me whole. Can you do what I can't do? I don't.
Yeah, and earlier this year, you released a record called Rags of Light, which I will admit I listened to for the first time this afternoon, but the record blew me away. I absolutely loved it. Can you talk about that record?
Oh, man, thank you for saying that. You know, that record is a record that's probably the record that I'm most proud of any record I've ever made, and it took a long time to make that record, and the record is really actually a pretty heavy record in terms of it's a very heartbreaking record. It came out of some really, real serious pain in my life. So it's not a happy-go-lucky record, but it was a record that I needed to write in the sense that the songs for me were kind of a way of kind of a therapy at some level. Writing those songs was me trying to exercise some of my own demons and things like that. And so that's why the songs are pretty heavy. And so that's really where that record came from. I can't be specific about, you know, exactly why the songs were written. Some of them I could tell the stories behind, but some of them I can't. But that record was, that record I'm proud of, but on the other hand, I don't think very many people have heard it, because basically, you know, you put out a record now and you throw it up on Spotify or Apple Music and it's free. And even though it's free, you can hardly get people to listen to it. So yeah. the way people listen and consume music now is so different that when that record came out, I was pretty bummed out in the sense that I put 5 years into making that record, and it just kind of went out there, and then life moved on, and I'm just kind of, there's a part of me that hopes at some level that people will listen to it and hear the songs and that the music will affect them, but, you know, I'm not touring the record and things like that, so that's, you know, part of it, and so it's, you know, obviously my fault as well at some level, but Yeah, I'm proud of the record. There's a song on the record called Lazarus that is a song that I'm particularly proud of. And there's a song on the record called Jawbone that I'm really proud of. And some other ones as well, but it's thank you for listening, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I thought it was fantastic, and I think it's worth listening to.
Yeah, I do too, but on the other hand, I kind of thought to myself, well, gosh, maybe it's the case that it's just not that good, and the reason that I'm not hearing anything is, you know, friends of mine don't want to say, like, Balmer record's kind of a bust, you know, maybe that was the case. So, but that record has caused a certain element of self-doubt for me, and I actually have another record ready. I've written the songs for another record, and I'm just trying to sort of muster up the courage and the is it worth it to take the time and the money and the energy to make another record, because it's you know. But, yeah, I feel like I have one more record in me for sure to release. But we'll see how that goes. Save for the day of my sweet revenge. The cleansing of violence. Trembling lips. I've got a question, if you'll answer it. Yeah, I've got a question, if you'll answer it.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our theme song was written and composed by the legendary Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes and give the show a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, click on the Patreon link at asthestorygrows.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening. I never felt so joyful.